I'm Laura Patey, and I live in Newton, Mass. I am a proud parent of two young men. My partner and I adopted our sons each when he was 11. So I've had the opportunity to parent kids who are now in their 20s, and that's an important part of my identity. I'm also a lesbian, I'm a bit of an activist, a disability advocate, and I work in disability services in higher education. I've always had a strong inkling toward really looking out for the underdog and the person who's somehow marginalized in society. And I think that probably developed from my own sort of internalized homophobia. And knowing that I was somehow different and not feeling like I ever fit in, I think that that has really drawn me to be a protector and an advocate. And I didn't feel like I had that protector or advocate. My family is wonderfully supportive, and they're great. But it was my own sort of internalized process. You know, as you go through adolescence and identity development, you know, figuring out who I am and how I relate to others in the world was one where I felt like I didn't really feel like I fit in. And so trying to figure out how I could secure the kind of support that I felt I needed was really challenging. And I often felt like an outsider. I'm one of six kids. And I can remember, you know, going home for the holidays and being at my parents' house with all of my siblings, and they were talking about their significant others and what they were doing, and I kind of just talked about work. It didn't really feel like I could talk about who I was, and so it took a long time. I didn't come out until I was in my 30s, early 30s, so it's been transformative process for me, and I think for others in my family, because I think that what happens, and this is what I really believe is at the core of who I am and what I do, it's relational. You know, it's all relational. And when we connect with others who are what we perceive as different from ourselves, we realize that there is far more commonality than there is difference. And it's that piece of what I'm always looking to do. And I think that when I advocate for folks, as I say, who are somehow marginalized, whether it's my kids who were in foster care for years and bounced around, it's a matter of making sure that they feel and know that they're valued and that they're loved. And it's that connectedness that gives them a sense of self that allows them to then make other connections. That's what I think our purpose is on this earth. Lee and I had a commitment ceremony years prior. I mean, we've been together for over 20 years. So when civil marriage became legal in 2004, we went and were married in our church. And it was kind of an interesting thing because we're members of an Episcopal church here in Newton. And when we wanted to get married, we went to our priest. And I was very involved in the church and was, you know, serving on the advisory board, the vestry for the church, and had actually been senior warden. And when we went to our priest and said, you know, we wanted to have a civil marriage and get married in the church, she had been informed as a priest by the bishop that they were to do no same-sex marriages in the church. And a couple of rogue priests were doing it, but not ours. And so we had a series of meetings, and we brought in another priest who was willing to do the marriage as long as we were working this out with our priest at the same time. So we brought him in, and after about the third meeting where we were all sitting together and sort of talking all of this out, our priest sat down at the beginning of this next meeting, and she said, I can't think about why I wouldn't do this. And she said, you know, anybody walking down the street who sees this beautiful little church and wants to come in and have a marriage in this church can do that. And yet here are people who have been, you know, pillars of the community, as it were, and I'm not allowed to marry them. That doesn't make any sense. And what was really moving about the whole experience, so we eventually then planned our wedding at the church. And it was just a small affair because at that point we had our commitment ceremony years before, but our two sons were with us then. And so it was just the four of us with the priest. And it was really lovely. Afterwards, we had a big reception in the church. which we, you know, there was another couple who had also gotten married that same weekend. And so we had this big party, all of us together. And our older son, Jesse, got up to give a toast at this reception. And it was a very powerful statement. He was probably, I don't know, maybe about 16 at the time. And he talked to the priest and he said, you know, thanks for giving us all a seat on the bus. And that was the extent of it. And it was really like, people were just so moved by this. You know, it was like, this is what it's really all about. You know, it's about the humanity of all of this and loving who you love and realizing that that's what's most important, not what the rules are, you know. It was really great. Yeah, I mean, those who are opposed to gay marriage don't need to have a gay marriage. Those who are opposed to gay people adopting don't need to be part of that. That's really okay. I feel like they're wrong, but it's really okay. I can value difference of opinion, but I really feel very strongly about human rights and about each of us, especially when we're talking about things that are about love and caring for each other, that how can somebody say that that's not right to do, you know? Well, sure. I mean, to further complicate the issue, for several years, both of our boys were in private Catholic school and run by brothers. And so it was really, we weren't sure what that was going to be like. You know, what we found were, you know, knowing the back history of our guys and the fact that they had not only been removed from their birth families and lost all of those connections, they had both been adopted. And the adoptions in the adoption world were disrupted, is the word that they use. Jesse had been with his adoptive mom for 4 years. One weekend, she dropped him off at respite care with people who had known him since he was an infant and had really had a lifelong connection with him, and she never came back. Tell me about kids who have had a tough go of it. You know, we've seen it, and we lived it every day for years. Alex was also with a pre-adoptive family, and, you know, kids who have been in care, they've had so much pain and loss in their lives that they have a really hard time in a lot of ways making connection, which is, again, you know, I just keep coming back to the same thing. It's all relational. And so working through the pain of kids who have experienced disrupted connections and teaching them that they are valued, that they are loved, it's such a critical, you know, it's such a critical element of what we do. So in parenting our kids, yeah, I'm sure they got teased in that Catholic school. And what we discovered is kids pick on kids for any number of reasons. And so it was really arming our kids for the fact that, yeah, not everyone was going to value their family. That was okay as long as we did, and we surrounded ourselves by people who did, our church community, our friends, and other people who did. And I think that, you know, we sort of practiced making statements like, you know, when somebody would make fun of Jesse on the football field and say something about his two moms, and he'd say, so pick a real issue. That was the line. It was like, so pick a real issue, you know. But we ran into a lot of different kinds of things like that, and that were around relationships that our kids had. So I can remember a time when Alex was in public school when he first came home to us, and one of the administrators in the public school said, well, you know, these kids. And I was like, I could just see red, and I was like, which these kids? Are you talking about kids who have been in care? Are you talking about kids with two moms? Are you talking about Latino kids? Which these kids are you talking about? You know, really sort of saying, what are your expectations? How, you know, do you see this kid as a human being, as someone who has unbelievable skills and assets, or do you just see him as one of these kids, a marginalized kid who's okay to just throw away? it kills the soul and the spirit, I think. We would sit around our dinner table, and our boys, I mean, I feel bad for them now in retrospect, because they grew up with two process queens. You know, we talked about everything. And we would talk a lot about how I could pass. You know, people didn't need to know I was a lesbian. You know, I could choose to, you know, share that with people or not. Since I've been wearing a wedding ring for, you know, 20 some odd years, people treat me differently when I had my ring on than before I had my ring on, because they're making assumptions about me and what my family might look like. We would talk a lot about being marginalized and really sort of embracing all of who you are and what it brings to your life. It's not about, for me, it's not about sort of having people tolerate or accept, but it's about really embracing your identity. I do a lot of work in disability services. I mean, that's my professional arena. And I think that I take a very humanistic approach to disability and identity. And it's not about, you know, not just sort of dismissing the limitations, but it's about really embracing that the aspects of that that create who you are, because it's based on your experiences, how you see the world. And so it's really trying to say, take all of what your experiences have been and all of who you are and really embrace that. Don't try to hide that or dismiss that in any way. So I think when people are viewed as these people or somehow marginalized, I think it really kills the soul and the spirit. It is very diminishing, and it makes you feel invisible. And I think that that's the problem, that we then tend to hide those parts of ourselves rather than embracing them and saying, that's part of who I am. That makes me who I am. Those experiences made me the person that I am today. My partner, and sometimes I refer to her as my partner and sometimes as my wife, Lee, and I've been together for over 20 years. And together we've adopted two sons, Jesse and Alex. Sure. I'm Laura Patey, and I live in Newton, Mass. There are some funny stories and then not so funny stories in coming out. I mean, obviously, it's a process, and it begins with yourself, you know, and so coming out and really embracing who you are and getting some sense of surety around that as you explore and think about sharing that with anyone else. So the process of coming out was one, you know, I'm a fairly private person, believe it or not, and so I, you know, was somewhat reserved. I happened to be living in this area, and most of my family was in Florida. Most of my family was in Florida at the time. They weren't an immediate part of my life on a day-to-day basis. I did have one of my brothers who was living in the area. Well, to make a long story short, Lee and I had just gotten together, and we were looking for a church, and one Sunday morning in reading the Boston Globe, we saw that the Episcopal Church had welcomed same-sex, had really recognized same-sex individuals and allowing the priests, gay and lesbian priests, to be part of the church. And so we went to an Episcopal church, and sure enough, we show up and there's a whole TV crew there. You know, I kind of snuck in the side door, and they said, oh, did you hear the news about, you know, the vote yesterday? I said, yeah, as a matter of fact, that's why we're here. And, you know, they said, were you willing to be interviewed? And I was like pushing Lee forward, like, she'll do it, she'll do it. And so I was standing behind the front door inside the church and peeking out, and she was being interviewed in the front steps, and I thought, oh, this is fine. And so we went in, and we went into our pews, and I was holding the hymnal, and the opening hymn begins, and all of a sudden there was a bright light, and the camera crew had come into the church. Now, I was assuming and hoping that they had permission to do this, but they were, like, right in front of us and filming us as we're singing along, and I'm like kicking Lee, like, okay, I guess now I'm going to be coming out, because they said, so Lee Powers and her partner, and it was on the local cable news, like, repeatedly that day. So I had made a few phone calls around some of my relatives and friends in the area, and I said, well, you know, you might see this on you know, this, the local cable channel, and just thought I'd let you know. It was a little hairy. The most challenging part of coming out for me, though, was going down and talking to my parents and spending some time with them. And, you know, I knew that they'd be fine, but they were more than fine. They were really great. And I think that the reality is that, you know, in talking to my siblings and stuff, I got the sense that most of them had a sense before I did, perhaps, or before I was willing to share it with them. And, you know, it was amazing. That was one of those amazing sort of freeing times, because you carry around this burden and this secret, in a sense, and not having it be a secret that I needed to keep in any way. And I've always been very intentional since then about, you know, where I work and where I choose to worship and where we socialize. It just is a known fact. It's not anything that I have to, you know, announce in hugely public ways, but I also, it is very well known, and I talk about my family and I talk about my wife and have pictures all around in my office and make sure it's a welcoming environment for students. I'm working at a university for students to come in and talk to me about that. Yeah, everything that we have been talking about does relate to peace. Peace for me is it's a state of mind. It really is a very personal and internal thing, and yet is experienced only in relation to others, because I really believe as human beings we are very relational and dependent upon others. And even, you know, whether you're an introvert or an extrovert makes no difference. It's about human connectedness. Peace is this state of mind, this inner sense of well-being, and as I said before, knowing that you're valued as an individual, as a human being, and loved. That is the essence of peace. I think I work towards that and try to achieve that by being as authentic as possible in making connections with other people. It's sort of a developmental process for me, and one that I used to be far more intentional about. I would find myself whether it's in a professional meeting or in a public forum, making an assessment somehow of someone else and thinking, you know, I wonder what they might have to say that will be of benefit to me in some way, or dismissing someone, perhaps because of the way they looked or perhaps because of the way they acted or my assessment of what they had to offer. And I look back on my younger years and I think, you know, I used to have to really say, wow, I'm catching myself doing that, and to really be intentional about not wanting to do that. And now that doesn't even come into being. Like, I really like to make eye contact with people and like really look at that person and say, I see you. I see who you are. And I want to know about you. And I want you to know about me, because I think when we can know about each other, then whatever differences there are that are between us are sort of new things to explore, not at all threatening, not at all a sense of, you know, where I need to defend or you need to defend yourself, but that we can find ways of really connecting. I think as human beings, we often get into the posture where we have to protect ourselves somehow, and that other things outside of us are going to be a threat to us. And so we get into this fight or flight mode. And I think that when we can diminish our instinct to go that route, and when we begin to feel that fear, that fight or flight, and we can stop for a minute and say, that's just fear, and let me really assess the situation. And am I really being threatened? Am I really in danger here? Or is it just challenging this, you know, the sense of myself or the sense of the world as I know it? That we can then really look at getting to know each other. I consider myself a fairly religious person and a very spiritual person, but I think that people use religion a lot of times as a boundary or a barrier. I have strong beliefs, and if you don't agree with my beliefs, then somehow you're a threat to me, you know? And I think that, to me, that doesn't make any sense at all. I can relate it also to the whole notion of gay marriage, and people who feel like when gay men or lesbians want to marry, like somehow that's a threat to traditional marriage. It's like, trust me, I'm no threat to anyone's marriage, you know? I'm seeking to find the person with whom I want to connect on that intimate level, and I'm not a threat to anybody else's marriage, and our relationship, if anything, will only solidify and strengthen the notion of marriage. Hardly a threat. But I think that fear and threat is a lot of what goes on for folks. I think that those are red herrings. Those things just get thrown into the mix to really confuse the issue. And what I like to do is really, again, is to look and to talk to the individual and say, so I want to respect your opinion. So let's just say you were coming from that place. Like, I really want to respect your opinion. We're not going to talk about, you know, three people in a marriage or five people in a marriage or marrying your animals or whatever other kind of, you know, radical idea that somebody may have. What is it that really scares you? Or what do you feel threatened by in my having a relationship with my wife? And really get to what's coming down. I think that when people get to know other people, like I can think in our church, we have folks who have who are much older, and you know, from generations even older than my parents, who never knew that they knew anyone who was gay or lesbian, but then they knew me, they knew Laura, and they knew Lee, and then they saw us with our son Jesse, and they saw the love in that family. And then they saw Alex come home to us and the love that was part of our family. And I think it was those kinds of things that break down those barriers, because they weren't threatened by what they saw at all. They saw two parents caring for their kids and wanting them to have a sound spiritual base in their life and wanting them to be part of a community and connected to other people. And that's not at all a threatening thing. So it's really getting to know people and for people to get to know you. I think that all of the obstacles that get in the way are really related to fear. Fear of the unknown. Well, it's difficult to reconcile, you know, when people use religion as a weapon rather than what I really feel, which is that it is about a belief in something greater than ourselves that can really be a tool to bring people together. And I think that my view about religion and about spirituality is the tent's pretty big. And there are lots of corners in this tent, and there are lots of ways to understand religion and spirituality and belief systems. And that really what it's all about is about a connectedness. How my background in growing up relates to my understanding of peace. Well, you know, the first thing that comes to mind, and it's kind of an interesting thing, is that, as I said before, I'm one of six kids, and I'm the fourth of six. So I was the youngest of the older kids and the oldest of the younger kids, and I always feel like I sort of somehow embrace that mediator role and in keeping the peace and somehow bridging the gaps between all of us. So even though I felt very different, I also clearly felt very, very loved and connected. And I think that that sense of protection, even though there was some isolation, I didn't feel totally exposed or vulnerable all the time. And so I think that that also, you know, has helped me understand both feeling somewhat marginalized and what feeling protected can be like. And even though I didn't feel necessarily totally protected in my own identity as it was emerging, I did know what the sense of protection and being cared for felt like. And I knew that that was very important. I saw that that was very important in my siblings and in my community. I went to Catholic school, and I saw some very, what I would have to deem, unchristian things that happen through that experience. I also got the message, I think, about compassion and empathy and understanding, even though it wasn't always what I saw demonstrated. When have I seen a good example of peace? As I said, I think that peace is a state of mind. And so I can tell you when I have felt most peaceful. And I can picture it so clearly. It was when a friend of mine, Vincent, and I participated in the AIDS ride. And they had established these rides from, they were all over the country. We participated in one that was a Boston to New York AIDS ride. And there were all these people who were gathered together in a fundraising effort who were pushing themselves beyond what they believed their own limits were to really begin to address, raise awareness, and raise some money for research around AIDS and HIV. It was in the midst of all of that, and there were all kinds of, it was hard. It was moving a whole city from Boston, New York on bicycles, you know, and we were camping out in between, and there were moments on that ride when I'd be riding, and I just realized this sense of inner peace, like, I was part of doing something that was really big, and it was my own personal contribution. And so climbing a hill in Connecticut that was just unbelievable, you know, and you're pushing and you're pushing. If you were to ask me about doing that at any other time, I'd think about how challenging and how difficult and how awful it would be. And it was so incredible. And I was just looking around and I was like, everything seemed beautiful. The sky was gorgeous. The, you know, the surroundings were phenomenal. The sound of people just saying, on your left, and riding up this hill. Because we were part of something that was really big. And it was all kinds of people with all kinds of different beliefs and ways of being in this world. And we were all united in this one activity. I thought, if we could get people together like this, this is the kind of thing that can really make a difference. I think that the things that I wanted to be sure to include is making sure that I made the point that I have seen really what I would consider the depths of the terrible things that as human beings we can do to each other, and whether I've experienced those myself or seen those through the eyes of my kids. And I also know the reparative piece of love and connectedness and the importance of relationship. I think that that's what I really wanted to get across is that I really believe that peace is attainable if people can just make the effort to both be vulnerable and to be willing to sit with somebody else's vulnerabilities. That's what it's all about. That's how we can get to a place where we can diminish that fear and that anxiety and really say, what is it that we can do together more powerfully than we can either of us can do in isolation? I think that if people were willing to both be vulnerable and sit with someone else while they're exposing their own vulnerabilities, I think that we can then really connect on a very deep level. Start with being kinder to ourselves, which then might allow us to be kinder to others. Perhaps not be so quick to judge and to assume we understand the other, but to really be willing to invest the time and energy in getting to know the other.